हमेशा, अरे मैं तेरा हमेशा, दूर मैं जाऊं तारों मराऊं, दूर जाऊं तारों मराऊं, लेकिन मैं तेरा हमेशा, हरी मैं तेरा हमेशा। भक्त जन आवे, भक्त जन जावे, भक्त जन आवे, भक्त जन जावे, लेकिन मैं तेरा हमेशा, हरे मैं तेरा हमेशा। मैं जब मरूं अखियों को देखो, मैं जब मरूं अखियों को देखो, वो तुझे कहे मैं तेरा हमेशा, हरी मैं तेरा हमेशा। दूर मैं जाऊं तारों मराऊं, दूर मैं जाऊं तारों मराऊं, लेकिन मैं तेरा हमेशा, My Lord, I will be thine always. My Lord, I will be thine always. I may go far, farther than the stars. I may go far, farther than the stars, but I will be thine always. My Lord, I will be thine always. Devotees may come, devotees may go. Devotees may come, devotees may go. But I will be thine always. My Lord, I will be thine always. When I die, look into mine eyes. When I die, look into mine eyes. They will mutely say, I will be thine always. My Lord, I will be thine always. I may go far, farther than the stars. I may go far, farther than the stars, but I will be thine always. My Lord, I will be thine always. Be in love with that God. He resides in your own heart. I bow to him in you. I bow to him everywhere. Today I would like to read to you from, actually it's a saying from this book, Conversations with Yogananda, but it's on the back cover. I found the master on the lawn outside, listening to the one of the chants as it was played back over a loudspeaker. What lightning flash glimmers in thy face? What lightning flash glimmers in thy face? Seeing thee, I am thrilled through and through. Seeing thee, I am thrilled through and through. The master began almost to dance, his arms outstretched to the side, his body swaying, his eyes closed. He was swaying back and forth in ecstasy. Play it again, he requested. Then again and again. All of us on that occasion were deeply moved. Afterward, as he was leaving, he said quietly, I see all of you as images of light. Everything, the grass, the trees, the bushes, everything I see is made of light. You've no idea how beautiful everything is. You know, the light and shadow of life We need to enjoy both. Death has its own kind of light, the disintegrating atoms that dissolve everything back. To us, it looks like decay. But in fact, as he said to us, there are all these little entities in there, light, dissolving these things back so that they can re-manifest as matter again. Look how, as Mahatma Gandhi said, in the midst of death, life persists. And this is so that in the great drama of life, we see death everywhere, and yet somehow it keeps springing up into new life. I talked of that forest fire that we had 24 years ago at Ananda Village in California. Well, it wasn't long before the sprouts began to come up again. The earth begins to push up again. And even forestry people tell you that it's a good thing to have lightning strike and burn a forest, because that renews the forest. Death renews our lives. And when you become, as my Guruji used to put it, a psychological antique from old age, I try never to be old. I still want to have a young outlook, ready to change my mind at the drop of a hat. If I can see that somebody else has come up with a better idea, why not? Whatever is, is. It doesn't have to remain this way. It sort of distresses me when people say, well, what I always like to say, or this is the way I've always seen things being, or this is the way it was when I was a boy. Well, no, thank God it wasn't that way. It has to keep changing. Life evolves. And in the midst of it all, even though one form drops, another form comes up. Be that way, and you'll find that you can find God more quickly, too. Don't think that it's got to be this way. Don't think that dogmas have to be stated just in these terms. Truth is infinite. It's like a diamond. You can turn a diamond many ways, and its different facets, each one will show its own light. And so the truth itself has many different forms. I think God brings us into different bodies and different countries and different cultures, so we won't get stuck in thinking that this definition of truth has to be this way. This is one of the things I've often felt about spirituality as opposed to religion. My guru was much more interested in spirituality than he was in religion. Religion tends to be an organizational way of freezing truth. It tries to tell you that this dogma is fixed and eternal. It tries to say that this dogma stands in place of the reality it defines. No definition can ever take the place of what it defines. Truth is fluid. Truth changes all the time, not in its essence. But you know, it's sort of like a cloud. You look up at the clouds and you see them taking so many different shapes. They can look like battleships. They can look like trees and forests and people and all sorts of things. None of them fixes everything in eternity. I've often thought that if a computer could, it's quite imaginable, that over a period of time, you could have the same words as are in the Bhagavad Gita, or let us say a longer scripture like, or an epic like the Mahabharata. It's at least conceivable that if you give it long enough, all those words will arrange themselves into exactly the order of the Mahabharata itself, or the Gita, or the Bible, or whatever. But that doesn't mean that it'll stay that. One nanosecond later, it'll be completely changed. Nothing is fixed in eternity. Always remember that time moves. Pantare, as I said, all is flux. So, as you know, the good thing about dogma is that it gives you a plateau to reach up to. But once you've reached that plateau, don't get stuck there. You want to keep on climbing. And so throw that definition away and be ready for more. Because as you grow, you will see that what is true at one level of existence is no longer true later on. Ultimately, you'll see that the greatest wisdom is that which doesn't really define. There is a sort of a misunderstanding in the West about this kind of fluid consciousness, because you see, in the West, people are trained, I was trained, to think in terms of Aristotelian logic. Aristotelian logic tells you either or. A thinking must be either this or that. It cannot be both this and that. And this is very good in logic up to a certain point. I found a certain lack of that kind of logic sometimes here in India, because the Indian culture is more based on intuition. And if people don't have intuition, I've seen that they can make outrageous statements, and they aren't true at all. Like, and I'm sure it's perfectly, a good one. Some pundit was saying to a Western archaeologist, you know, in all the excavations we have done in India, no one has found a single wire. This proves that they had the wireless. Well, of course it doesn't prove anything of the sort. Well, that's pretty ridiculous. I don't think anybody would be so foolish as to think that was proof of it. But I have, interestingly enough, encountered many people in India who say this proves this or this proves that, when it doesn't at all. Well, Western logic is a very good discipline in that way, but it's a limited discipline. And the intuitive way is actually much truer. The concept that a thing can be true in one context and not in another is necessary. The Aristotelian method, as I said, I was brought up in it. I was a little nonplussed when I found my guru giving an interpretation of a scripture, let us say, and saying it means this. Well, I thought, okay, it means this. Then he turned around and said, it also means this. And I thought, well, can he make up his mind? It took me a while to understand the sophistication of his view. There's a story from the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he was in Puri, there was a wise, learned man who saw this beautiful young boy, obviously intelligent, very devoted, just singing God's name. And he thought, well, it would be good to teach him the scriptures. So he said to Chaitanya that he would be glad to instruct him in the Shastras. And Chaitanya, being very humble, said, I'd be very glad to learn. And so this pundit took a scripture and interpreted this passage in 25 different ways. And Chaitanya said, well, that's quite a feat. Well done. Let me see if I can think of some too. He came up with over 80 or 90, I don't remember exactly, but an incredible number. This man just became his disciple. He saw this he's so intelligent, so sophisticated in his understanding that I'm no one compared to him. Well, it's an interesting story when you juxtapose his attitude with the Western attitude, because the Western attitude would be, it's what is the one true meaning of that scripture? But my guru helped me to understand that a truth, if it's central enough, can be seen from all different angles and understood in many different contexts. And the deeper a truth, the more broad its applications. So we need to understand that truth is not just absolute. It's relative in a certain sense, but always in that relativity leading toward an absolute that is beyond all definition. Truth has to be experienced. You can't just define it. Definition is not experience. Experience, once you have that experience of God's bliss, you don't need to talk about it. Once you feel His love, you don't need to talk big, give big lectures on love. You just enjoy. The bumblebee makes a loud noise outside the flower. Once it's inside, it's silent. Its wings stop beating. It is sucking the nectar. And so, in the experience of life, enjoy the ups and downs. Enjoy the fact that we need the dark experiences in order to experience the light. And when we can take both, then all of a sudden we find that there's light even in the darkness. There's light everywhere. There's joy everywhere. There's bliss everywhere. But the experience of it begins with seeing that one in all opposites. In this song that we're going to sing, Nightingale, it talks about those things. Nightingale, sing of joy in the night. Let each tone, silence groan, is the second stanza, earth and heaven unite. Now that's the third stanza. Morning laughter, evening tears, snow and blossoms all fade. Joy must sing in the night to face change unafraid. When you can sing even in the dark experiences of life, when you can sing even when things seem to be going against you, just saying, God, it's a part of your joy. It's a part of your love. I will enjoy it in your name. Then you will see that that line in the first stanza, every grief, every wrong, has its ending in song. All the sadness of your life will turn to song and beauty when you have faith in him, when you allow his song to flow through you. So let's listen to this song now. It's a song I wrote many years ago, but the idea of it was to express that behind the duality, beyond it, is that one joy of the infinite spirit. May that joy reside in your heart. Joy to you.
Nightingale, nightingale, sing of joy through the night. Teach my heart to impart everywhere your delight. Sing of moon rays on the rain, sing that love's not in vain. Every grief, every wrong has its ending in song. Joy through the night, teach all men how to spin clouds of gloom into light. Without silence, what is song? Without night, where is dawn? Were it not for men's woes, who would smile at our change unafraid. Nightingale, nightingale.